Hey everyone, welcome back to How to Be Queer. Today, we are talking to Tiana and MJ from Glad Day Bookshop in Toronto. This is our second episode in our Pride series. Next week, we will be talking to Reagan from the Archives. All right, enjoy the episode. Kellum and I had a fabulous time talking to these two individuals.
Stop smiling!
Sorry. Tiana's making me blush. Tiana, you go first.
My name is Tiana Henry. I am a cis queer femme. I'm biracial. I just turned 31 and I really like dogs, which is really basic, but I'm kind of basic, I realized. I'm really excited to be here. Thank you for having us. MJ and I met like six years ago because we both... because I think he was already working at Glad Day when I started. Working together at Glad Day isn't as notable as the work that we've done together outside of Glad Day. Is that fair to say? We've collaborated on a lot of really interesting projects. Smut Peddlers being one. We've got a smutty reading series. We've done some really cool fundraisers for the Palestinian Film Festival. We have done a lot of really cool book launches together. So I think that I'm really pleased that even though he's no longer part of the Glad Day team, we're able to maintain that external relationship and we're still working together, which is wonderful.
Yeah, Smut Peddler. We'll talk about Smut Peddlers. Smut Peddlers is the best. I'm MJ Lyons. I'm Glad Day's former bookstore manager. Started there as just like a bookstore associate in 2017. I identify as queer. I use like he, him pronouns. That's about it. I always call myself gender ambivalent because that is genuinely how I feel about gender. I'm extremely ambivalent about it. So as I am ambivalent about a lot of things. On top of working at Glad Day, also an author, I have a couple of books published. My most recent one, Queer Werewolves Destroy Capitalism, is up for a Lambda Award for LGBTQ erotica, which I'm super excited about. The ceremony is actually coming up pretty soon, so we'll see how that goes. I basically am going to like say exactly what Tiana said. Like we met through Glad Day when she started there. I feel like we just kind of clicked. We're both kind of like sassy queers. Like that's kind of our thing. What we both actually bought together a shirt, like shirts that say "Okay, Boomer, have a terrible day." Like I was like, I'm gonna buy one of these, and Tiana was like, throw one of those in the cart. So that about sums up our relationship in a really good way, I think. Smut Peddlers is incredible. We started it just kind of because we wanted to fill a hole in the schedule at Glad Day, and it just kind of like blossomed into this really incredible thing. So we can definitely talk more about that. And I, again, like Tiana said, I'm so thrilled to still be working with her through like Smut Peddlers and all the other little projects that we've done.
I should also mention that after we both were seen wearing those Okay Boomer shirts at Glad Day, a boomer complained to our boss about it, which was hilarious.
Which is the point of the shirt. Yeah. They are proving the point of the shirt, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Love that so much. I think Chris and I have a very similar story where we actually met in a workplace. And I think the best thing that came out of that workplace was our relationship and the relationships that we have with some of our other friends. And now we get to work on this together with another, you know, the other co-host is also a former David's Tea employee, which I think is like the best thing ever. The gayest thing about David's is, I mean, tea and us. So
that's fantastic. Should I talk about what I do at Glad Day?
Oh, yeah.
So I would love to know, Tiana, what you do at Glad Day now. And then MJ, if you could also share what you did at Glad Day as, you know, the bookstore manager and also the importance of that, that would be great. So whoever wants to go first, we can just kind of throw it out there.
Yeah. So I was hired, I think 2017 or 2018, the years are, you know, made up, as a bartender. And I was given more responsibilities pre-pandemic. And then when the pandemic happened,
You basically do everything.
Yeah, so I think I'll just say what my current title is. I'm the events coordinator and the social outreach coordinator, but I also am the social media manager. Unfortunately, I shouldn't be, but there isn't anyone else doing it. So I took that on as well. And I also still bartend.
I was about to say, you still serve.
And I still work in house, and I sort of have like a hybrid type of job. So that's my current roles. Mikey?
Yeah, I mean, like, that is kind of like both Tiana and I are like the Glad Day story in a nutshell, because it's like, it's a small team. It's a very like DIY, like queer team. So even if you start doing one thing, you very, very quickly end up doing basically everything. So yeah, my story was I got hired. I've actually been involved with Glad Day for quite a while. Been involved in they do an annual festival called Naked Heart, LGBTQ Festival of Words. So I've been like part of like panels and readings through that for like a few years since they started doing it. Yeah, I was actually on the first sci-fi fantasy panel, and you know that group is still sort of like, we keep in touch. It's lovely. Started as a bookstore as a bookstore associate in 2017. Very much like Tiana, quickly took on a lot of responsibilities. I actually was coming straight from Starbucks to Glad Day. And so I ended up, even though I was working bookstore, I would pop over and, you know, serve coffees and stuff. People would ask me what wines we had, and I would always go red and white, because I don't know anything about alcohol. Then eventually when the bookstore manager who got hired on around the same time moved on, for a while, I was like bookstore manager light, until finally I was like, well, I'm doing all the work of a bookstore manager, so I might as well just like claim the title. So that's what I did. And the bookstore manager position itself, it's very much very similar to Tiana's role, in that like you're doing the job that you are kind of meant to do, but with the bookstore manager position, it was very much a, like, you're also very much like a social outreach person. Like, you have a lot of people reaching out to the bookstore specifically, like both for events, like book launches and things, but also things like we would get a lot of requests for like donations, which is extremely fair. So there was a lot of sort of like logistical tasks in terms of just like connecting with people, reaching out and making stuff happen, which again, like a retail manager, it's not necessarily something that you have to take on, but because it's a small DIY team, you want to make everything happen that can possibly happen. And I think that's one of Glad Day's strengths, is the amount of things that we did and that they still do with the very, very little they have. Glad Day is like, the Glad Day story is like stretching a buck as far as you can possibly take it. So yeah, that's, and yeah, I sort of worked there for a few years, moved on last year to go back to freelancing and then to start a new role, and still stay involved, like still do Smut Peddlers with Tiana, and still very much want to stay active with Glad Day in terms of programming, because I fucking love Glad Day.
I love that so much. And I think it's so interesting. I mean, Chris can totally speak to this as well, but so many times I find it so interesting that the people who are out as part of the community end up wearing so many of these like ad hoc DIY hats. And it kind of doesn't really matter if the organization or agency or workplace that you're with is queer or not. It just kind of happens. I've always subscribed to the jack of all trades, master of none title. And the more I get into the community in Toronto, the more I expand the community that I have, everyone seems to have some version of that. What's so important about Glad Day? Why, like, it's a bookstore, it's a cafe, it's got a bar. What's the big deal? Tell everyone what the big deal is.
I can go back in time if you want. So Glad Day's existed. We celebrated our 50th anniversary during the pandemic, which was fun. So Glad Day has existed in some form since 1970. It actually started as kind of like, I think it started in somebody's apartment or like a backyard shed or something. For a time, it was like, it literally was out of somebody's backpack. Like, they would just go around with queer books. These are the Glad Day myths, but myths that I very much would believe. For a time, it actually shared space with The Body Politic, which is a like sort of seminal, like queer queer liberation publication that has gone on to become other publications. And so, yeah, it's really strange how Glad Day has kind of like touched so many different aspects of the queer community in Toronto, including Glad Day was kind of at the forefront of like a legal censorship battle for a very prolonged period of time. They basically, plainclothes police officers would regularly like come into Glad Day, you know, peruse the wares, look for something like basically to get the business in trouble with, and they would very easily find that. Mm-hmm. What Glad Day actually got in trouble for it, and what ended up being a very, very prolonged court case around censorship, that Glad Day first lost, but then eventually appealed and won, was actually a lesbian BDSM magazine, which is the best.
Naturally.
Absolutely. So Glad Day was very much targeted by sort of like the Canadian state for a very prolonged period of time.
I should sort of interject, sorry yeah. to cut you off, but this is really notable because this culminated into a Supreme Court case, and it's changed pornography laws in terms of what they can and cannot sort of stop at the border, because this was a lesbian BDSM material that was confiscated at the border because it was seen as pornographic. So the laws that Glad Day fought for and changed ultimately changed the way that they can sort of enforce pornography laws in Canada. Every law student has to study this case. It's very important. This is the scale. This is sort of what we're discussing here.
And it's really, really wild to me. And it's like the really ridiculous thing is how like recently all of that happened. Cause I mean, again, Glad Day's only existed for 50 years, but like talk about targeting, like there's stories about how like, you know, boxes of magazines or books would show up and they'd just be slashed because like, you know, we were opening the box to check what was inside of it, but it would just be like an X-Acto knife, you know, all over a bunch of stock. Even the prolonged court case was very much like, it's a targeted thing. It was meant to basically put Glad Day out of business, but like they had some community support, they had some donor support, and they fought it and eventually appealed Supreme Court and won it. So it's pretty incredible. And yeah, I mean, Tiana, you should speak about all of the stuff that Glad Day is doing these days, which is everything.
Yeah. Why is Glad Day important? It's a hard question to tackle. What I like to bring up is just, and I think Mikey can speak to this too, because he used to be sort of front and center, like the first person that would be seen coming into the store. But, you know, we get a lot of tourists, and we get a lot of folks that are like, you know, from places, small town, Ontario, not even that far away from Toronto. And their facial expression when they walk in, it's really incredible. I think that's the constant reminder that I have. Privileged, was raised in Toronto. I was didn't have a lot of experience with like, you know, constant discrimination, but these folks absolutely do. And seeing their facial expressions coming into the store and how they're so amazed to be surrounded by books that reflect their experience and are written by people like them. I see that every single day. And so that is a constant reminder that, you know, the struggle isn't over. People very close to us, people, our neighbors, are still experiencing isolation, and being in a space that is made for them the importance of that cannot be overstated. So I think just in that, just walking in and seeing folks that just walk in, their expressions and the things that they tell me. One thing that I want to mention that I'm sure MJ can speak to this too, that I've noticed in my tenure at Glad Day. I would say it's been about 6 years. I'm not sure, like I mentioned, exactly how long. I think I blacked out for a lot of it. The increase of parents and family members who want to be better and learn and buy books for themselves and buy books for their family member who has just come out as queer or trans. That's been something that I've seen really increase in the last couple of years, which is a wonderful thing to see. And I always tell those folks, I always thank them and tell them how, you know, how lucky that person is to have them in their lives. And so that's very wholesome. I also have like 4 different GSAs coming in the next few weeks, which we didn't really have before. So that's really wholesome too. And my job is to give them a little spiel, and the teachers are, you know, tell me that it's their first time ever being in a queer space, these high school kids. And so that's, you know, that's just like, oh, another thing on my agenda to do. For me, it's just another day, but for them, it's probably gonna, you know, exist. You know, we all have our like coming out story, like we all have this. And then I met this person, then I was in this space. And so I'm grateful to be a small part of that journey. Also, we get people of all ages, a lot of elders too, who describe their first experience going into Glad Day when it was on Yonge Street in the historic location at Yonge and Wellesley, and how important that was, that that space was there in the 80s and 90s. So
literally every single time, like an older person who's been around the community or has at least like visited, every single person talks about walking up it, like the old Glad Day location. It was a second floor inaccessible space, which is one of the big reasons why they moved. But it was like this like narrow, steep staircase up to the second level. And every single person mentions it. Like that's what they remember. It's like the walk up the stairs to Glad Day, which again, it just is like, it's so fantastic that that was everybody's experience. Yeah. And I also think like, at the end of the day, especially like working on the bookstore side, it was a retail job, and like it was, you were managing a retail space. So like anybody who's worked retail or service knows you get a bit jaded. You get a bit like, just another day. But those kinds of moments where like somebody, like especially like a kid walks in and they go, oh my God, look at all of these gay books. And you're just like, that's what you do it for, right? Like it's just the most lovely thing in the world. But even more than that, and I would say like Glad Day is a community hub more than people realize. And I think one of the things that I'm really excited to talk about, I can really brag about it now that I don't work there any longer, is to like no one realizes how much every single staff member at Glad Day takes on. I'm going to single out Tiana, because one of like my very early memories of like Tiana as a coworker was like a middle-aged person, like maybe late 30s, early 40s, came in very upset. He had just lost the place where he was living. He came in and he was like, I'm homeless. I'm homeless. I don't know what to do. And I remember, like, again, I was jaded. I'm very much the kind of like, oh yeah, you know, we'll send him up to the 519. Like they can take care. Like, you know, it's their, he's their problem now. But I remember very, very specifically, Tiana sat down at a table with him, was like going through her phone with him, called this like a homeless shelter, called around, and like basically she found a place for him to go that night. And like, where else would you go and find something like that? So even beyond just it being like the physical space, Glad Day is really, really, it's like, it's a community resource, which is both, I think, a good and bad thing, because it takes a lot of emotional labor to be able to offer that to the community. So like that is what I will always give kudos to Glad Day's staff about, because they go beyond, above and beyond.
I would say that we definitely manage a crisis a week, I would say. Like, yeah. I did one last night. I did one last week. Like we're definitely a resource center as well. And people go there because they know that they'll be able to sit there without having to pay for anything. Let them sit, we'll get them tea, we'll talk to them, we'll make sure that they feel safe and comfortable. That happens very often.
And it was, I'll just jump on that, because I do want to point out again, basically at Glad Day, you were doing frontline work. Like you were doing a lot of social justice and social worker work completely unpaid. Like you were getting your, you know, your salary and your tips or your wage and your tips, and that was it. Like, but then still to go so far beyond what is required of that role is like absolutely incredible to me.
I find it really interesting that spaces where obviously the intention is for people to come in and be able to find resources and find people who look like them and have the same emotions that they do and have the same kind of feelings that they do and write books about it. And obviously as a bookstore first, that's kind of one of the first things that I think of when I think of Glad Day. And I'm a huge reader. I love Glad Day, but I love books. And I find it so interesting that you can read all the books in the world about, you can read so much gay literature, but it's not until you find like a physical, tangible community that you can actually like sit down and have a coffee and feel like it's okay to talk about an experience that you're going through or an experience that you've witnessed or anything like that. So I just want to thank you both for all of that. And I know that Glad Day has made an impact on my time in Toronto, and I know that it's made an impact on so many others. So I just wanted to say that, because I think it's, we all have worked in those retail spaces that become a little bit more than that. And I think it's so important to be able to shout out when recognition is definitely due.
Thinking of like just back to when you were talking about, like, you know, kind of queer isolationism. A lot of our listeners are from the Simcoe County area as well. And when you look up like Canadian queer history, Glad Day is a huge part of it. How does someone who is maybe a little bit more isolated from you, like maybe in the middle of kind of Saskatchewan, how would they kind of relate themselves to something that doesn't really happen to them?
How can they feel more, like, connection to queer community?
Yeah, it's like, how do they connect? How do they connect with some, with like, yeah, with physical spaces that they may not have direct access to?
Yeah.
Well, in March 2020, when we had to close our doors quickly because we weren't allowed to stay physically open and it wasn't safe to be, the main lead owner, Michael Erickson, and I started the Glad Days virtual events program. We call it Glad Day TV. And Glad Day TV developed out of a need to sort of keep events going in line with the fundraiser that we had launched in March 2020, which was to support folks that lost their wages immediately. We gave out immediate grants for people that, you know, were sex workers, bartenders, drag artists, et cetera, people that depended on tips and lost their main source of income due to COVID. And so with the fundraiser that actually was very successful. Initially, we raised hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, primarily by small donors, small time donors, community members, queer and trans people that wanted to support their own, which was an incredible show of solidarity. I just wanted to note that. Thank you, everyone who donated. The fundraiser is still ongoing, and we use that money to support artists and performers. And musicians. So we developed this events platform for that exact reason. And we were able to keep a lot of the events that we had in person going, and we were able to have a lot more, and it reached people that weren't local or weren't able to access the space for whatever reason. And so as we're slowly bringing back in-person events, we decided to keep Glad Day TV running. We do hybrid models. We have kept our virtual events, and that way we can have people that don't live nearby join us, talented authors and performers, and also to access folks that can't make it for whatever reason. And so I would encourage people that are listening that don't live in Toronto to check out our Glad Day TV programs, and we have events every week, and so they're more than welcome to join us there.
Yeah, I'll jump in on the bookstore side of things too. I think one of my favorite things about the bookstore, because again, it was like, yeah, it was a lot of work with like very little resources. So a lot of the times you were kind of like looking for the thing to, you know, you were looking for like the nice thing to get you through your day. One of the things that I absolutely loved about managing the bookstore was fulfilling online orders. At times it was very, very overwhelming because people sure do want a lot of queer books, which is great. And but again, when you have very limited staff, that can get very quickly overwhelming. But my favorite thing was that you start developing relationships with like repeat orderers. Like I remember just so many instances where I'm like, I'm the kind of person where like you order a book, I'll probably remember your name, especially if I associate it with like a specific book. And then you order another book, and then I'm like, how did you enjoy the book? It's like, I'm so glad to see you ordering another. I don't know. It just is like, it's a total book nerd thing to enjoy. But it just is so lovely. Because again, most of the time, it's people who don't live in Toronto. Oftentimes, they live in extremely disparate places, like more than you would even like guess. And so just to start forming those relationships with people, obviously books being the center of it, so if you're a book nerd, that's like heaven, is really lovely. But even beyond that, like again, like knocking on that do-it-yourself ethos of Glad Day, there would be times when like book clubs would reach out to us. I remember one of them from, I think it was the summer before I left. It was like an elderly book club where they would basically be ordering books by sort of like younger authors, which is the best. And then they would they would read them and talk about them online, obviously, because it was during pandemic times. But one of the things that I got to do, because they were like, oh, you know, it's a little bit difficult. It's like, it's hard to ask everybody to come into the store to pick up their books. And I was like, I'll go around and deliver them. Like, I will hand deliver them, because like, A, it's saving an older person from like coming out, especially during the pandemic. But B, then I get to go around and hand out books like a fairy godmother, right? Like, it was the best. And I remember that very fondly. Like, I had an entire day where it was basically just like a pilgrimage around Toronto, like hand delivering books. And it was amazing. So again, just these like weird little things. I don't think that you would get that at like a Barnes and Noble or an Indigo and Chapters, probably not. Just these weird little things and like dynamics that you would never ever get anywhere else, where it's like Glad Day is just special in that case. And I'm sure that a lot of independent bookstores are very similar, but Glad Day was just its own weird little beast.
I think we're kind of like, you know, skirting around, but not necessarily addressing that queer people love books. And I'm kind of thinking like, why, like maybe we want to talk about that a little bit. Like why is it important for people who might be feeling like isolated or feel like they don't have someone to relate to? Like, why is a bookstore important for queer people? And why would it be good to like build community in a way that a Barnes and Noble might not be able to?
I'll jump on this because I have a quote that I'm pulling up right away.
Perfect.
So I used another one of my favorite things that I got to do at Glad Day was we had like a Blackboard calendar that I would redo every I'd redo it every month to get all of the events and stuff that were coming up on it, and I would always do a quote at the bottom because again I'm a word nerd, so that's the best. So one of my favorites that I ever did, and I mean, one of my favorite authors, James Baldwin, my cat's going to come over and say hi. So yeah, James Baldwin said, "You think your pain and heartbreak are unprecedented in the history of the world, but then you read. It was books that taught me that the things that tormented me most were the very things that connected me with all of the people who were alive, who had ever been alive." And I think that's like, that kind of says it all. Like, books connect people. A book is literally, you're being handed something obviously written by a human and you connect with it. Like that's kind of the point of it. And it is very true that like, I think of all of the times that even people with the most different identities from me, like I think of Billy Ray Belcourt, who's like a queer guy, but he's Indigenous. That's a huge part of you know, his practice and his writing. The fact that I can pick up a Billy Ray Belcourt and see myself in this experience, and at once kind of feel both incredibly connected, but then also to be able to see the differences. Like, that is just, you basically have the world laid out in front of you in a book. And I think that's a really wonderful thing. And with queer people, I just think that was the first access point for a lot of people. Like, you go to the library and you search gay book and you find the gay book. And that is your start on the journey to gaydom, so.
I'd also like to note that, you know, we know that the queer, gay, trans experience isn't homogenous, and that there's lots of different intersections. And what I'm really proud of is that our stock does reflect that. So there are different sections of the store. We've got Black narratives, we have Indigenous narratives, we've got BIPOC faves, we've got South Asian narratives, East Asian narratives, et cetera. And I think that is even more telling when you see somebody with intersecting identities come in who are queer and trans and a POC who like sees a book written about their community written by someone that has the same identities as they do. I think that's even more telling because that's so rare. And we definitely, I think in the history of Glad Day, it was very cis white male centric. And I think that was certainly the majority of the materials that were available that we stocked in the original locations. And I would say that one of the major changes to moving it to Church and Wellesley was to really serve the more marginalized members of our community. We moved to a historically gay neighborhood, Church and Wellesley in downtown Toronto, that is still overwhelmingly cis male gay. And so Glad Day, I think, is, you know, can't help but be a product of its environment, But I would say that if you look at who patronizes us versus the other places, you'll see that we get the folks that wouldn't feel comfortable being in the other spaces. So that's also notable and is reflected in our stock and is the stock that I would say grows more and more every year, which is wonderful to see.
Yeah, I want to jump on that really quickly because I always think of like this isn't like a read. This isn't me saying that their sort of like thing was legitimate because it is, but I had this one customer, every time that I saw him come in, he was like, he would always go to the back of the store. There was like a back corner where there was basically like, there was lesbian literature, there was gay male literature, there was like poetry, and then I think like theory and history. And I would inevitably wait for him to come over to me and go, "You don't carry any gay guy books." And I would kind of go, like, "So what were you doing over in that corner? Like, they're over there." But what he meant was that it wasn't so much there are no gay guy books, but it was what was being centered. And I can speak from like a business perspective, and I think it's absolutely incredible. Like the like Tiana was saying, the best selling sections have always been the BIPOC faves, Indigenous Two-Spirit, the Middle East section. We could literally never keep stock. Like you'd get 20 books in and they'd be gone the next day. And history and theory as well, like those were the best selling sections. And I think like Tiana said, it is very reflective of the people who walk through the doors.
I'd also like to tell your listeners that we ship countrywide. So if they want to do any sort of delivery order online and gladdaybookshop.com, we're more than happy to send any materials their way.
I think it's so interesting that sometimes our first reflections of ourselves is in literature. And I know for myself, it was because I got caught hiding a smut book behind my Bible in chapel when I was in grade 7.
Delightful. And
probably
horrifying at the time, but a delightful story.
It was a delightful story. Can't tell you the name of it now, but I know that it was ripped in half and tossed into a recycling bin. But
at least it was recycled.
It was recycled. At least there's that. But I think it's, you know, we read history books and we read social studies books. It tells stories of everyone else. And I mean, especially from, you know, the white cis perspective all throughout history and more than likely also like a British white cis perspective. I don't know about anyone else, but like I can pinpoint the second when I got to those pages in that book and I was like, oh, this person has feelings towards like not a man. Oh, what the heck does that mean? And like also like, oh, cool, so I'm not the only one. Because this was in Alliston, Ontario, which is outside of Barrie, Ontario, which is outside of Newmarket, which is outside of Toronto. So, and like that is literally like how many steps I would have to go to talk about my hometown before I came to Toronto. Finding myself in those pages was really fucking cool.
I mean, it's the best. Like, yeah. And I think it's just, there's so many people with like a different experience than yours, obviously, but at the same time, an extremely similar.
Can we talk about smut? Speaking of smut?
Yes, let's talk about smut.
Okay, fine. Sounds good. Smut. Sounds good with me.
We're very proud of our smutty a reading series that we created like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
We did a couple in-person events where we just asked sort of amateur writers, whoever, like I wrote a smutty thing and I was the first piece of writing I'd ever done just cause I was part of it. It's just so rad. We did this thing. We like read sexy stories in front of a crowd of thirsty queers. And then when the pandemic happened, we moved it virtually and it's been hugely successful every time. We have a few people that we always ask to read, and then we get like new folks, mostly friends of ours that want to try out their hand at erotica writing. We were nominated for a Lambda Award, Best Queer Erotica, very excited about that. We were featured in Cosmopolitan, which like made my like 13-year-old heart sing. We sold, we turned into a zine. That's what was obviously a nominated, but we sold it. Like we had a very small print. We sold like 100 copies and the proceeds went to Glad Day Lit for the 50th anniversary. And so that was really cool. We have one coming up, right? It's June 30th.
Oh my God. We need to start planning. Oh my God. That's so soon. I'm on another planet at the moment. So
it's June 30th. Okay. And it will be a hybrid, depending on how COVID looks, but we'll do probably some folks in person and then live stream it on Glad Day TV for the folks that aren't able to make it. But keep your eyes peeled on Glad Day's Instagram and Facebook, and you'll see all of our events for Pride.
I tossed into the chat. Both are available as e-zines, and both they're still constantly selling. Like, it's ridiculous. And the proceeds do go to Glad Day Lit. Like, they go to Glad Day Lit, which then goes to artists and funds, you know, Glad Day's nonprofit work. I think the Smut Peddler's success story, let's talk about Kel Hardy. Kel Hardy, who is like a beautiful, equally gender ambivalent, like soft dyke. She's the most wonderful person in the world. She, and I was talking to her just recently because we were at an event together, and like Smut Peddler's was her first, like, I have written something and I am sharing it with the world. Within the span of a couple of years, not only had she like connected with multiple people in the sort of like Smut and Erotica community, but she got one of her stories in the Best Lesbian Erotica of the Year book. So it's like, again, like I always say, Smut saves lives. But like in this case, like it has led to be able to as like the event producers, I mean, Kel is one of the event producers as well, but to be able to see her grow into like a fantastic published author is just like, it's the coolest shit ever.
We did have a hand in that. We're very proud of them.
We did. Yeah.
But also I think Mikey and I have made it our low-key agenda to bring sexy back to Glad Day. I think, yeah. Like we mentioned, there is a history of censoring our materials. I think one of the stigmas that queer people have to face is that we're sort of highly sexualized. We get criticized for being sexual at Pride, et cetera. And there is this movement to sort of appear like sanitized, family friendly, like love is love, that kind of shit. And I think what Mikey and I wanted to do, and I think we have been somewhat successful in the last 5 years or so, is to sort of reassert that sexuality is intrinsic to our experience and that we shouldn't hide from it. And that you can have sort of like our family friendly, like kids section at Glad Day, and like people all ages coming to our events, coinciding with our like smutty erotica section, which is much bigger than it used to be. For example, I hosted a kink party at Glad Day twice, which, you know, I'm shocked that I even got away with that. That was right before the pandemic happened. That was, you know, predominantly attended by people that weren't cis men. You know, and I think that's very important. And I just wanted to mention that as well.
I'm wondering if potentially for those listeners who don't know exactly, what does smut have to do with Pride?
Ooh.
Or kink?
Yeah. I'll go on a little rant. Like Tiana was saying, there's both, there's a huge movement within the kind of mainstream, like I would say gay community, we can say LGBTQ community, but I think especially the gay community, like Tiana said, there's this whole thing about appearing normal, basically of sort of like living either kind of in tandem or like within the kind of like heterosexist structure that society takes. A big part of the fight for like same-sex marriage was about appearing normal to both, you know, the everyday heterosexual and then the everyday heterosexual state. So to access that, you kind of need to like censor yourself to a pretty big extent. But that's kind of getting aside the point. What is like kink and smut have to do with Pride? I think part of it is just that, like, going back to the very, very early days of queer liberation, sex was an integral part of like the liberatory. It was, despite the fact that it was very obviously like white cis male focused, it was very much a part of the makeup of like the queer community and the queer liberation movement. And I think that very much got lost in the very, very like essential fight for rights. What it has to do with the modern community, I think, is that there's been a huge, it's kind of like a pendulum swinging. Like it goes from queer liberation being very integral to sex, to the other side of it, which is like, oh, you know, we do want to appear normal, or we don't want to be like, the specter of the kind of like the predator, which is very much something that the queer community very much still faces these days. So I think to show that smut and sexuality can, like Tiana said, live beside the kind of like the family friendly, the like the kids books, is a really incredible thing. I sort of regularly produce an event called Naked Boys Reading. The people who are on the chat can see my banners in the background. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's literally naked boys and they're reading. That is not very much not limited to like cis identified guys either. I get people who come in all the time and they say, wow, this is an event, it's both sexy, but it's not sexual. Like, it's hot, but it's not about sex. It's just about bodies. Like, that's what it's about. And that kind of, it blows people's mind, despite it just being this extremely simple thing. It's literally naked boys reading. So anyways, that was my rant that went all over the place.
I was going to ask you about the sign anyway. So I'm so intrigued.
It is exactly what it sounds like. So it started as a burlesque event. It started as Naked Girls Reading, which is a burlesque event in the States. It got taken over to the UK and somebody started producing it as a reading salon called Naked Boys Reading. So I got in touch and started doing Naked Boys Reading Toronto. And it's always incredible. It's the best. I can't wait to start doing it in person again, because, you know, getting people to take off their clothes online, there are safety and privacy concerns. So we would probably, I did get asked, like, do you want to do one? And I was like, you know, screen capping is a thing. And some people probably wouldn't feel too comfortable with that.
I think there's something to be said about safety and assimilation. When I sort of made fun of the hashtag love is love thing, I think that's a way we sort of, you know, rainbow wash real experience differentials. Queer and trans people do not have the same experience in love as cishets do, and that's just a fact. And so that sort of nuance and narrative gets lost when we try to say that we're just like them, because we're not. So I just wanted to say that as well.
Like coming off of the sort of like the rainbow washing and the pink washing, which is extremely, like, I mean, anybody who lives in Toronto during Pride can speak to the fact that the corporations just come out of the woodwork and it's rainbows everywhere. And you're like, you not only have you never done anything for the queer community besides, you know, oh, it's June, we're going to throw, you know, like $10,000 at a charity. It's not action. It's not any kind of transformative justice. It's pinkwashing, plain and simple. And so that like sexuality is very active, and it's very embodied, and it's very based on the individual. And I think that's something that's really lost in the kind of like the wider, like Tiana said, like hashtag love is love, like that. It very much smooths over all of the rough edges that are the joys of the like queer, trans, and non-binary communities.
Love is like our version of live, laugh, love.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. Put it in your bathroom when your grandparents
come over. It doesn't mean anything. Like, yeah, like love is love. Love equals love. Great. Like, it doesn't mean anything.
The amount of companies that reach out to me, in the lead up to June, my email box is ridiculous. Full of people being like, it's Pride, we want to celebrate you. It's like, Gladiate, we celebrate Pride every single day. Like, yeah. They're like, what are you doing for Pride? What are you, like, special things you're doing? It's like, nothing. We just exist. We exist every day of the year. We celebrate ourselves and each other every day of the year. You know, I love Pride. I've always loved it. I just like to party. I'm happy to celebrate my community, but we do that every day in our space.
Coming off of that, like coming off of what Tiana said, people also, like, my biggest pet peeve at Glad Day was people treating Glad Day like gay Google. It would be like, we would get, so my favorite was, it is, let's say, a corporation that is very, very large and very involved in supply chain, and it very much undercuts independent businesses and bookstores. I will not name the corporation. I had somebody reach out who was part of, it was like their LGBTQ, like their sort of like, I think it was like Toronto LGBTQ organization, which is, I guess, which is good. Like, it's good that that exists in them. But they reached out to me and said, we're looking for we're looking for a drag queen to, they reached out to the bookstore. We're looking for a drag queen to like perform a Pride event. So it's like right away, I'm like, well, I'm not like, I'm not drag queen coordinator. Like I don't have a drag queen switchboard. I mean, we can, but, and then they were like, we don't have much of a budget. And I'm like, you work for blank. You don't have much of a budget to hire a drag queen for Pride. Like, I was literally just like, yeah, I don't know if there's anything. I always would respond honestly and just be like, you know, drag queens deserve to get paid what they deserve to get paid. So like, you're not going to be able to find a discount bargain. I mean, you probably can, but that would probably be, it would probably be just me in a wig. So I'd be the discount bargain bin drag queen.
I was gonna say you're the wish version of the performer that shows up.
Yeah, very much so.
So if Wish as a drag queen ever turns up on Canada's Drag Race, we'll know exactly where that inspiration came from. Right,
so
here,
good.
You heard it here, folks.
Wish.com is such a good drag name. Wish.com.
It would be like wish.edu or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of drag queens, I know that other things happen at Glad Day. So apart from like reading and books, as someone who has, I think I've maybe been to Glad, I've been to Glad Day, but I just like walking in, I knew that it was a bookstore, obviously, but I'm wondering like what other types of things are happening at Glad Day.
Yeah, great question. So the bookshelves are movable, they're on wheels. And so we really are able to transform the space. We have like a whole lighting system. We have a disco ball. We had dance parties every weekend pre-pandemic. We're starting to slowly bring those back now. We had different meeting groups. We had different book clubs meet. We had like queer dance lessons. We had, we have Drake Brunch every Sunday. We have a whole slew of Pride events that are happening this month that center BIPOC folks. Name it, we've had it at Glad Day. My kink party happened at Glad Day, where we sort of put black curtains on the window to make it private. Anything that you can think of, we do.
Glad Day can go from being like an educational space where there's a high school GSA to a book reading to like, I don't know, like a wine hour to a book club meeting into a dance party. Like it can be all of those things literally in one evening. Like that is Glad Day.
That's fabulous. And that sounds just like the queer community. So I'm here for it. Just a collaboration mishmash. And I am so here for it. Okay. So we've talked a little bit about, you know, how you're shaping it to kind of come back to stop the like rainbow washing and like stop the desexualization a little bit, because like, I mean, as queer people, we kind of are inherently a sexual kind of like, we're tied to sexuality. But I'm wondering also, what is the future of Glad Day? So that might be part of it, but like what else is kind of like looking forward? How is Glad Day, you know, moving forward? Does it have like, what's its vision?
We are just trying to survive capitalism. Oh, we don't have a future plan. We don't have like funding to imagine a future where that isn't a constant stress, unfortunately. I think, and I'm sure MJ agrees with me, that we should be publicly funded because of all the reasons we mentioned. We serve the queer community, the queer and trans community, in the same way that 519 does. We love our neighbors at the 519. We work with them. We adore them. But we should also be publicly paid. But instead, we need to rely on selling books and selling coffee and selling beer. We've been able to sort of maintain accessible pricing for the folks that we know are the majority of our patrons. We don't charge people if they just need to sit in the space. And that is often the case, but we have started to rent out for private events. Like, you know, the queers that can pay to rent us out for birthday parties and stuff, which are typically like cis gays that are able to do that. And so that's sort of a way that we have a hybrid model where we're still able to have community nights where we don't charge rental fees along with having to enforce that, which we never did pre-pandemic. We never ever charged for a space. So that is a change that we're making because we have to enforce that in order to survive our huge rent every month. So that's just the real tea. We barely survived the pandemic. We are doing better now, but our story will always be just us doing our best to stay open. We don't have a huge board talking about what the future looks like. We have our community members, queer and trans staff, our very small staff, small but mighty, as MJ said, staff, just doing our best to keep things together every day. And so that's what I can tell you. I'm the events coordinator. And so I can tell you what my agenda is, and that's to center BIPOC events, which you'll see in our Pride programming, and you'll see in our, you know, most of our programming centers BIPOC events, and that's what I'll continue doing. And I can't say more than that in terms of our future. I just hope that we can stick around for the foreseeable future. I think that we will in some iteration. Like MJ mentioned in the beginning, we lived in a backpack, we lived in a shed, we lived in a tiny upstairs shop for decades. And so even if we aren't always going to be in this current location, we will live on in some iteration.
I mean, I think it's always ballsy of anyone who works in, owns, co-shares any kind of business to share the realities of it. And I mean, the reality is small businesses have been hit hard in the last few years. Even before that, small businesses were hit hard, especially in the Village in Toronto, where everything is being gentrified and taken over by huge corporations. I mean, if a Starbucks closes down on Church Street, what is that saying for the small businesses? Yep. I just appreciate that transparency. And we, Chris and I, are already thinking about how we can support and continue to collaborate with, you know, all of the businesses that are supporting us right now as, you know, a small podcast. And it's so cool to know, not that I didn't know it already, but it's so cool to know that Glad Day is going to exist forever in some way, shape, or form. You know, there's always a metamorphosis that happens. Whatever it looks like, it's going to be present.
But isn't that the queer experience, like being resilient? I know that that's a kind of a weird word to say now. People don't really love the word resilient anymore, but I know that it's something that we kind of have to be, like, you know, continuing to adapt and change and, you know, face these barriers that we've always faced and continue and, you know, continue to have that hope. Because I mean, it's really, really lovely that even though we're facing a lot of problems, it's still like Glad Day still has a future, and it kind of always will.
Yeah. And I think we were almost in better shape to survive the pandemic than other small businesses because of that very thing. Glad Day's used to being thwarted by different issues, pandemic, I don't know, censorship, capitalism, the state, capitalism, yeah, the police. So we're sort of like, let's go, what's next?
There is also something to be said for surviving purely out of spite. I think one of the things that is missing is that anger. Like, I think with resiliency, that is part of it, is that you're just like, you're surviving purely, like, there's something to be said about being a queer cockroach. Like, you can't kill us, even however hard you try. Yep.
And isn't that just the queer experience?
That's the queer experience. Surviving out of spite. Spite against the heteros.
This is the part of the episode where we kind of go, this is the end of our questions. If there is anything that we didn't get to ask you, or anything part of your own personal experience or your professional experience together, separately, or just about, you know, the fact that JoJo Siwa is no longer in the news because of her queer relationships right now. Anything that you want to share, this is kind of your space to do it now.
I would say that I am so appreciative that you reached out to me. I have never been asked to be on a podcast before. I'm like, am I a queer elder? Like,
you are a queer elder now though, Tiana.
Oh my gosh. I am really excited. I just wanted to share that I have always, in my tenure of being an out gay, I have always wanted to ride with the Dykes on Bikes, the Amazon specifically, who have led the parade and the Dyke March since the 80s. And I will be doing that this year. So I just wanted to brag about that. Thank you very much. I think I could die happy. This has literally been my dream come true. And so, you'll see me with a leather vest, tits out, on the back of my girlfriend's motorcycle during the Trans March and the Dyke March. So keep your eyes peeled for that.
How can I possibly top that? Like, that is the greatest thing of all time. I think the one thing that I'll say, I, like, kind of coming off Tiana and I's, like, putting together Smut Peddlers is, like, I think the thing that I've realized is that you cannot wait for somebody else to do the thing. You have to do the thing yourself. Sometimes, unfortunately. But, like, if you look at the queer community and you see something that is missing, like, do it. Because there will be people who will be so into it, and you will be, like, you'll be making people's lives, and you'll be changing people's lives. And that's a really incredible thing. I think we very much found that with Smut Peddlers. Like, it was a thing that was just supposed to be, like, a throwaway one-off event that just turned into a total love-in. And that's a beautiful thing.
And I think working for Glad Day is that you're just living your life, just adapting. And people tell you after the fact how important and life-changing it was for them. So I'm just so grateful to be able to service my community and work among queer and trans people and help folks, and they help me in turn, and I'm just so grateful.
Beautiful. Well, that's a wrap. Dang, so such good answers. I appreciate you both so much for taking some time to be with us and share so much. The work that we do as queer and trans people, regardless of whether or not it's work or not, is so emotional, because if we have the privilege of being out, it also means that we have the privilege of and the burden of educating almost hour by hour. So thank you both so much for sharing yourselves and sharing that with all of us.
Thank you for having us. Like, total blast. Great conversation.
Thank you both. I feel very privileged to share space with you. Thank you.